Are you ready?
I am ready.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us on The Change Artist, where we bring our listeners stories and great advice for leading and following through change from business leaders who are making a difference in their organizations. I'm your host, Alyssa Cox, and here on The Change Artist, our motto is, if change is the only constant in life, then let's do it better. And if you've ever been in the driver's seat of a change initiative, then you know firsthand that successful change actually involves a whole lot of selling, whether you're looking for project resources or you're trying to drive adoption of new tools and behaviors. My guest today is Mike Verrett, principal of Verrett & Associates, a firm that helps entrepreneurs shape their message and talk about their businesses in ways that make investors and buyers say, tell me more. And he's here with us today to challenge our thinking on how we craft messaging that engages our audience and helps us get from introduction to outcome. So Mike, let's dive right in. When it comes to communicating, how do you know that you've been effective?
Well, let's start with the idea of a conversation, right? A conversation is sort of a two-way street where people are asking questions and getting answers or vice versa. And it's based on a narrative all the time, right? It's based on storytelling, if you want to call it that. But we think in what happened? What happened next? What came after that? Then what happened? That's how we think about everything. And when a business gets involved, they change that dynamic simply because a business is thinking about 100% of what's important to it. But the audience only needs to know 5%, and they need to know it in the right order. And if you know 100%, how do you find that 5% that's right? So a perfect example of this, imagine Stephen King writes a new novel, 400 pages, and now it comes time to write the three paragraphs that sell the novel, the blurb. He can't do it because he knows everything. And all it is, if you think about it, is Stephen King's got a new book coming out. Here's what it's about. Wait to see how it ends. He's incapable of doing that because he wrote 400 pages. The solution is very simple. He gives it to someone who has an outside perspective and no involvement to read. They read it and they write those three paragraphs. Effectively, that is the biggest challenge from business to human. Business. There's no business without show business. No matter what we do, we play a role in business. It's not how we actually think in the outside world. Even to the point where language is different. We use words like synergize and e-commerce and ideate, and those have no place in the human mind. We say things like work together, buy it online, and think. So what happens in that insular sort of vacuum of business is they have an idea for how they're going to help an audience. They build that solution, and their first instinct is to run out and tell them about that solution. Everybody runs out and talks about the service they created, the product they created to solve this problem. The issue is everybody looks exactly the same at that point, and they're skipping way ahead in that book. Jumping out with your services to the outside world is like starting on page 5. They don't understand 1 through 4 yet, so how are they going to understand the importance of your services to them? What an audience sees, it's very simple. You have to be first, best, or different. That's what it boils down to. And an example of that that you feel every day, when you're scrolling social media and your thumb stops on something, you're experiencing what that feels like. That stood out to you for a reason. It could have been the motivation you were looking, or it caught your attention. It could have been a picture you saw tied to the headline, but apply it to Google, and all you're seeing is blue headlines. So you're clicking through results, digesting the first 3 seconds of that result, deciding if you want to go on or not. And if you don't, you just hit the back button. You go on to the next result. That's how we operate, right? What we cling to, what we read further down on, is what connects with us. And the idea of connecting with an audience is the first thing that has to happen to stand out as different, to appear to them as unique and they want to know more. And that's the goal of all of it. How do you talk about what you do in a way that gets your audience to say, tell me more? That's intriguing. I'm interested. What's next?
And so your background and the work that you do right now is largely around pitches, right? And helping people get their pitch right. And so as we think about then the art of communicating in sales, the art of the pitch, how do we distill? Because oftentimes we often don't have copywriters who can do our pitch for us. It's those of us who are embroiled in it
that now need to write the pitch because we need to rep our work. How do we go about as individuals subsetting the context in a meaningful way?
Well, it's important to understand where the human audience is starting from, right? They need a connection point, something to bring them in. A quick example of this would be TED Talks. If you ever watch a TED Talk, almost every one of them starts with a question so that they see the audience's hands go up and they're forming an initial, like, it's not unlike creating a conversation with someone where you find out where they went to school, like went to college, and you know someone who went there. You say, oh, do you know this person? Did you know this person? It's an entry point to a conversation. And getting from a presentation or a pitch to a conversation ultimately is what we're all trying to do. And one thing about the pitch, think about it in terms of a brand narrative that you're writing. And it applies to, say, a networking pitch. It applies to a presentation, the order of slides in your presentation. If you're building your pitch correctly for your own business, it's your homepage. It's all the same opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, to tell your complete story. And what happens when it turns into advertising and marketing for businesses, those are parts of your story that drive to your complete story. Visit us in store, see us online. But when you're talking about change management, you have to remember that it's not a standard operating procedure like an assembly line or an AI tool or a computer program. It's the human mind that's getting involved, right? And all of us are going to create barriers based on the fact that we're human. We may come to work in a bad mood one day and it changes the experience in the office from our perspective and even from the outside perspective. Oh, Mike seems off today. That's a dynamic that doesn't exist in normal standard operating procedure stuff. So change management is about getting buy-in, about tribalism, about seeing what's good for everyone. I look at it as not a company doesn't have people. They have a collection of individuals that don't have preset programming. You are always going to get a curveball from a human being when it comes to changing something or approving something. Case in point, I worked at Hasbro Toys for years, and I would regularly see well thought out strategies and product designs and ideas that we put 6 months into just leveled, thrown out the door by some VP who says, I don't like it. What's standard about that? That is distinctly human. Nothing else in the business gets to say, I don't like it or I like it. So understanding that point first, and it's not even selling, it's about relationship building, right? How do you empower the employees to advocate for their vision? Should be the top concern of every leader in any organization. But that leader is looking at a bunch of different silos of the business. HR, human, even the nature of calling it human resources is trying to turn it into an operating procedure. You're dealing with humans. It's not the same as marketing or sales or operations or logistics where you go by this calendar or this program and it gets done. This is about what people think in the moment when they're in the office. So I think the biggest challenge in change management is change belief, building the relationship with the people that all of them are seeing the advantage. And how do you get them connected to that idea of we're going to do what's best for all and not just the business, the people who run the business, who run those standard operating procedures. If they get attached to the idea that the leadership sees them that way, think about how much more flexible change will be.
If you're only worried about your pitch to your final approver, you've missed the boat, right? Influence is all about the relationships that you build well in advance. You build them over years before you even know what your final sort of influence objective is. Once you know what your influence objective is, how does your pitch, how do your communications, how does your language change as you get closer and closer to sort of your final influence target?
So it doesn't change as much as it's like, how do you communicate an idea up to leadership, across to your co-management, and down to your employees? Let's use that as an example. It all starts from everybody believing in what the one idea represents. They see it maybe in an abbreviated and executive summary form. These guys see it in terms of what we have buy-in for, and these guys see it as this is the vision for change in the company. But it all comes from one idea. If I'm looking through the lens of how I get an organization to believe in moving in a new direction, coming out of the gates, it's going to be acknowledging that we don't look at it as our people. We look at it as all of you individually need to make this work. And even a statement at the beginning in talking to an organization, if it's up, that becomes where we're seeing the challenge is the perception of the organization is they're just a group of people. They're a utility of the business and we have to change that. Great, how are we going to do it? And then we're able to get into how we do it. And they see the idea of the people versus the individuals that we have relationships with that make this business move. If that's the first thing they understand, it's like setting context for the rest of the conversation. You can point out examples next. Here's what we see when we look at it through the HR lens. Here's what we see when we look at it through the human employee lens. Then you could say, here's our solution. So everybody's attached to the idea of people versus these relationships. Everybody's seen an example of it and everybody sees a simple solution in a sentence. Then they want to know how it works and you give them a process. Then they want to know what tools will be applied in that process. That becomes the service or product for how you're going to manifest or implement that change. Then they want to know, how are we better off if we do this? Then they want to know, have you done it before? Can you prove it works? Then they want to know what's next. You've answered every question simply by predicting what they would ask.
As I think about sort of times when I've been involved in change communications, we go through those questions. And my feeling is that once we've gotten the right answer, we've got the crisp answer, an answer that really resonates with folks, I hear myself saying the same thing over and over again. We need to stay on message and be consistent as we talk to our various stakeholders. But you know, how do we strike the right balance between staying on message and coming across like a broken record?
You're hitting on sort of the third pillar of what I usually talk about. The first is predicting what they're going to ask. And if you were to use the example of how someone would ask questions, say, I ask the question, so what do? That kicks off a series of following questions, right? It's, oh, that's interesting. What do you mean by that? Okay, so how do you help those people? Well, that's an interesting solution. How does it work? Okay, so that's your process. What do they get out of that process? What happens? How are they better off coming out of that process? Have you done this for anyone else? Are there examples or case studies I could look at? Yeah, I'd like to schedule a call and find out a little bit more about how that works. I've just gone through the order of questions that someone would ask just to elicit information. So that's sort of predicting it and then directing them in the right order. But the most important part is the attitude that you project, right? How you want them to feel, the tone of what you're delivering. Now, let's put that into practice. Leadership, you're going right at them with, here's the challenge. We're all in this room together. This is our point of arrival. And we've come up with the solution on what we're... So it almost feels clinical, right? Because you're talking to the people who are making the decisions. They need an easy to understand, matter of fact way to look at it. Now you flip that and you're projecting down to the employees. The attitude there is completely different. It's not matter of fact, right? You have the opportunity to say, guess what? We just got out of a meeting with the CEO and we blew him away with this concept of our people versus our relationship with individual people. And I'm going to tell you all about it and how this is going to influence change and how we see the world now. Totally the same message with just a different overlay. So let's use an extreme example. Let's say you run a bungee jumping company, bridge jumping, somewhere in Moab. I don't know, somewhere where there's a bridge over two cliffs. You can't change the personality of what you do. You're in the exhilaration business. You're in the extreme business, jumping off a bridge with a rubber band tied to you. Meaning you can't invite a bunch of 50-year-old women who are getting together for lunch and set them up on this bridge and then unexpectedly push them off the bridge and they don't know they have rubber bands tied to them. So that's the personality of it. But now let's apply attitude. The one thing we have control over, right? It's 10% what happens to us and 90% how we choose to react. That's it. We don't have control over anything else. The attitude you can apply there is, hey, team leader, you need to bring your team out here and experience team building on steroids. This is the ultimate. You get them to that point of exhilaration together, the dopamine rushing. Wait till you see how they come together. Or I could speak to a consumer and go down the road of Mountain Dew to the extreme, jump off a bridge. Same message, same experience of exhilaration. The attitudinal adjustment is what I'm paying attention to.
If the objective is to get your customer whether it's an internal customer or an external customer, to ask follow-up questions. Because once they're asking for your narrative, you aren't perceived as selling to the same extent.
You're in a conversation.
That's right.
Yep.
I'm just responding to the things you want to hear. What do you do when you run into a customer and perhaps a critical customer who's actually not interested in follow-up questions? A critical customer who comes into the conversation, hears your first sentence, your first pitch, and just shuts down and isn't interested in listening anymore. How do we reopen the doors with those stakeholders?
So there are a couple factors. All of these things always race through my head depending on the situation. But if all the stakeholders are on a call, let's say it's a Zoom grid of five people, okay, and one person is the new person who says, I'm not interested. I know at that point, if I start pushing on why they're not interested, it becomes harder for them. Because I know they have four people who are interested who are sitting around them. So I'm going to make them defend themselves. And the people who are interested are going to inherently jump in and with their yeah buts and think about this, and they're on my side. But if it's just the decision maker, the first thing I want to draw attention to is this idea that it's been sold in. There's been a lot that people have liked. Can you give me an idea of what you're not interested in and what the issue is? Reason being, people will jump to their knee-jerk reaction and just state it, right? But if you start probing why, you start to get more information. Meaning, my website's not working. Well, why do you say that? Well, it's not converting traffic. Well, why do you think that is? Well, I don't think the content's very good. So in asking the question twice, I've determined that they don't have a website problem, they have a content problem, right? If you're able to push in that moment, whether the other stakeholders are there or not, it puts them in a position where they have to just defend it. Nobody is ever going to say, just because, go away. That is antithetical to human thought. And it doesn't happen that way. You'll run into rude people, of course. But as a rule, if you ask people, well, can you expand on that? Who would say no? So you need to put it back in their court and gain more information. If you've gotten to the point where it's gone through two or three rounds of stakeholders and they've gotten it to this person, there needs to be more than just, I'm not interested, in my mind. If it was a brand new exposure to the company and nobody had seen it before, that's a different story. That's like a no on the first sale. But if you have legitimate backup to show that there's interest and application and benefits in the approach, then that person needs to give you a little bit more information from where I sit.
So are there examples where you've seen people do this really well?
So I actually had it happen at 7 a.m. this morning, where this person has a phenomenal insight for a tool. Imagine a screwdriver is a rigid instrument, right? And you can get ones with interchangeable heads and stuff. But at the end of the day, your arm has to stay in the exact spot. Like, it is a rigid piece of metal. This guy has created an interchangeable system that allows for play in the handle. So you've got plenty of angle. It cuts down on calluses, on stress for manual labor using these tools. And he was pushing back on the idea of, instead of creating a line of power tools, focus on the adapter itself, meaning make it so it can go into any power tool. And all he kept pushing back on was, no, I don't like that. No, I don't like that. And I kept saying, well, what's the issue? Like, here's the market forces you're going to run into. Black & Decker and Skill, they'll just spend more money if you're trying to launch a new tool set. But if you launch something that integrates with theirs, they can't say no. Yeah, but I put a lot of work into this. Well, I get that, but that's to create the idea. Yeah, but see, this one here I actually made using this. And he started to explain the product to me. And I had to keep pushing back to the idea of, think about Lowe's or Home Depot. You have this vision of your tools are going to be everywhere with this revolutionary new adapter set, but that's not what the market forces are going to say. And getting focused on what the spark of the idea is what you have to stay focused on. I just kept probing until he got to that point where it was like, I put a lot of work into this, was telling for me, because he wants to share what he put into it and how it came about. And sometimes, you know, when we're entrenched in our thinking, our ideas, our vision, it's easy to miss what the outside world sees. That's exactly why that outside perspective is necessary sometimes. An organization trying to change internally without any external point of view or process, perhaps, is going to be really challenging because they all see it tunnel vision, that insular capsule of internal. And to provide that, even when they're pushing back, to get to the point where you see it's coming from their unique perspective and not what's best for the whole, that's where they start to shift.
Yeah, I love that we keep coming back to this idea of subsetting the context and the customer relevant context. Can you get to the customer relevant context as you're crafting your messaging? Because you're not talking to yourself.
No.
You need to talk to your customers and you need to say things and speak to their understanding of the context and what interests them, not what's salient and relevant in within the context.
I would be willing to bet that same individual said no, not interested by slide 3, meaning they weren't being fed the story the right way if they made their decision at slide 3 and say a 10-page deck. They're not even getting all the way to the end. And more importantly, what we see is judgment from an audience. What an audience is actually doing, they're on or off, they're binary. They're paying attention or they're not. That's it. And if they're not paying attention, it's because they're disengaged with the material at that point. They've already made up their mind about something. It's not important to me. I'm not interested. I already know this. 3 great examples where somebody will tune out and do something else.
I love it. Now, I know we're coming up to the end of our time here, but I want to sneak in one more question, right?
Yeah, hit me.
If people come away from this conversation with just one piece of advice in crafting effective messages to drive change, what would that piece of advice be?
The greatest piece of advice I could give anyone, and this is after 2 years of working with businesses on this sort of pitch mentality, is your solution is not the first thing they need to connect with. Their motivation is. So I'll use an example very quickly. Say you're looking for a plumber online, plumber near me in Google. The first 3 plumbers are like, you need a plumber? We're a plumber. Here's our phone number. The fourth one says, if water is leaking, don't call us. Click this button and we'll be at your house in 15 minutes. One of those is talking to your motivation for why you would search for a plumber. If it's a shingle or a light bulb, that's a Saturday project. If water is not where it's supposed to be, time stands still. It's destructive. We can't fix it ourselves. It's time sensitive. And that's the difference between plumbing and any other household issue. That plumber knows that and is speaking to your motivation in the moment. The other 3, need state. You need a plumber, we're a plumber. The one that's speaking to why you need a plumber is the one that's going to stand out to you.
I love it. Well, thank you, Mike. I know I've learned a lot today and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Now, if our listeners want to connect with you directly, how should they go about doing that?
The easiest thing to do is find me on LinkedIn, Mike Verrett, V-E-R-R-E-T. I think I'm the first one that'll show up that has anything to do with an elevator pitch. But you can check out my content there. It's just words of wisdom on these exact types of problems that people can hopefully learn from and get something out of.
Great. We will be sure to include that link in the show notes so people can reach out directly with any follow-up questions they may have. I really appreciate your time and perspective here. I know I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have as well. And hopefully our listeners can take your advice and apply it to their own teams. Now, if any of our listeners would like to bring these kinds of conversations to their own organizations, you can visit us at blueswitchconsulting.com to learn more. Thanks again, Mike.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. This is great.